This program may not be suitable for young children.
Welcome to Street Talk Theology with Pastor Dominic Grimaldi. Pastor Dom went from a life of organized crime to federal prison. There, God saved him and set him free. Soon after his release, he attended seminary and received his master's degree and is now the senior pastor of Desert Sky Baptist Church, where he serves with a passion for biblical theology right here in Casa Grande. Now let's join our host, Pastor Dominic Grimaldi.
Pastor Dominic Grimaldi here with Street Talk Theology. We take theology and bring it to the streets. It's sermon time again. Now, this is a tough sermon. This is from Genesis 34. That's a tough sermon. Not a lot of sermons preached on, but I think there's a great lesson in this. So for part one from Genesis 34, may God bless and keep you as we navigate this tough text together. This is the day the Lord has made. Let us be glad and rejoice in it. And may the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob richly bless us on this Lord's day. I want to get into the text right away because it's a long text, but I want to just read it. Like I said, this is a challenging sermon. It's a challenging sermon to preach it. It's a challenging sermon to decipher and see what God is speaking through this. But we do know this. God is speaking. And that's what's important. The word of God is living and active and sharper than any two-edged sword. Let's go to the 33rd division of Genesis. Rachel will get it on the board, or Nikki will get it on the board. I want to start from the 18th verse, and I'm going to read all the way through 34 and 31. This is the word of God. And again, it's living and active and sharper than any two-edged sword. Now Jacob came safely to the city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan, when he came from Padam Aram, and he camped before the city. Then he bought a portion of a field where he had pitched his tent from the hand of the sons of Hamor, Shechem's father, for 100 kezetah, 100 pieces of money. And he set up an altar and called it El Elo Israel, the God of Israel. Now Dinah, the daughter of Leah, whom she had born to Jacob, went out to see the daughters of the land. Then Shechem, the son of Hamor, the Hivite, the prince of the land, saw her and took her and lay with her and violated her. And he was deeply attracted to Dinah, the daughter of Jacob. And he loved the young woman and spoke to the heart of the young woman. So Shechem spoke to his father Hamor, saying, "Get me this girl as a wife." Now Jacob heard that he had defiled Dinah, his daughter, but his sons were with his livestock in the field. So Jacob kept silent until they came in. Then Hamor, the father of Shechem, went out to Jacob to speak with him. Now the sons of Jacob came in from the field when they heard it. And the men were grieved, and they were very angry because he had done a disgraceful thing in Israel by lying with Jacob's daughter, for such a thing ought not to be done. But Hamor spoke with them, saying, "The soul of my son Shechem longs for your daughter. Please give her to him as a wife and intermarry with us. Give us your daughters and take us and take our daughters for yourself. Thus you shall live with us. And the land shall be open before you. Live and trade in it and take possession of property in it." Verse 11. And Shechem also said to her father and to her brothers, "If I find favor in your sight, then I will give you whatever you say to me. Ask me ever so much bridal payment and gift, and I will give according to as you say to me. But give me the girl as a wife." But Jacob's son answered Shechem and his father Hamor with deceit. And thus they spoke because he had defiled Dinah, their sister. And they said to them, "We cannot do this thing to give our sister to one who is uncircumcised, for that would be a reproach to us. Only on this condition will we consent to you, if you will become like us in that every male among you be circumcised. Then we will give our daughters to you. We will take your daughters for ourselves, and we will live with you and become one people." But if you will not listen to us to be circumcised, then we will take our daughter and go. Verse 18, now their words seemed good in the sight of Hamor and Shechem, Hamor's son. So the young men did not delay to do the thing because he was delighted with Jacob's daughter. Now he was more honored than all the household of his father. That's an interesting passage there. So Hamor and his son Shechem came to the gate of the city and spoke to the men of the city saying, these men are peaceful with us. Therefore, let them live in the land and trade in it. For behold, the land is large enough for them. Let us take their daughters for us as wives and give our daughters to them. Only on this condition will the men consent to us to live with us, to become one people, that every male among us be circumcised as they are circumcised. Will not their livestock and what they require and all their cattle be ours? Only let us consent to them and they will live with us. And all who went out of the gate of the city listened to Hamor and his son Shechem, and every male was circumcised, all who went out of the gate of the city. Verse 25. Now it happened on the third day, when they were in pain, that two of Jacob's sons, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brothers, each took his sword and came upon the unsuspecting city and killed every male. And they killed Hamor and his son Shechem with the edge of the sword and took Dinah from Shechem's house and went away. Jacob's son came upon the slain and plundered the city because they had defiled their sister. And they took their flocks and their herds and their donkeys and which was in the city and that which was in the field. And they captured and plundered all their wealth and all their little ones and their wives, even all that was in the houses. And Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, you have brought trouble on me, making me odious among the inhabitants of the land, among the Canaanites, the Perizzites. And my men being few in number, they will gather together against me and strike me, and I will be destroyed, I and my household. But they said, should he treat our sister as a harlot? This is the word of the Lord. You know, some sermons are hard to write or tough to preach than others, but the responsibility to rightly divide the word of truth could never, ever, ever be avoided. This story comes after last week's sermon on the confrontation between Jacob and Esau, which was not an easy reunion. We remember Esau came with 400 men. Jacob wrestled with God. Something had to give. Remember that from last week. In fact, it was only by divine intervention that Jacob was protected by God and that Jacob had found favor in Esau's sight. Just kind of bringing you up to speed from last week. Even though Esau was a mighty warrior looking for vengeance, coming with 400 men, he received Jacob's gift, which was a type of the temporal blessing of the firstborn, which we know Esau coveted. But of course, Esau could not receive the spiritual blessing of the firstborn. That was only God's to give. Right, Devon? That was only God's to give. And it was given by way of divine providence to Jacob. You know, we know there had to be a lot of baggage shed between the two brothers, if we have studied, but God was in control of that situation. He's in control of all situations, even ones where his name is not mentioned. If you notice this narrative that we just read, God's name is not mentioned one time. Miss Carolyn is checking and looking and see, right? That's okay. That's what you're supposed to do. That's what I like. There's also a 9 chapters. Is it 9? Not 10 chapters in the book of Esther where God's name is not mentioned. Just because God's name is not mentioned does not mean that God is not in control. And that's important. And this is a narrative here that, again, is a tough preach, but one that's necessary. Let me say this. We live in a world that there's a lot of evil in this world. I mean, we see the stuff happening in the Middle East right now. We live in a world that evil is prevalent in this world. But I'm going to tell you something. Evil will not have the last say. But we live in that world. And even though we live in this world where evil prevails at time, again, God's got a governor on evil. If God did not have a governor on evil, we'd be in trouble. It can only go so far. And I think all of these things that we see in the world today are for the reason to bring ourselves to repentance before a holy God who's in charge of everything. We are called to be salt and light, lest we take our light and hide it under a bushel. This story you've just read brings with it many challenges. Again, the silence of God's name is telling. It seems right out of the book of Judges where every man is doing what is right. You want to say it, Glenda? In his own eyes? First off, let me say this. You got to understand, narrative is important. Shechem was not a good place to stop and settle. But in this life, we bring on many toils and snares. Shechem was so close, but yet so far. Now, keep that in your watch pocket. With that being said, Jacob's visit to Shechem happened some years after, since the mothers and their children bowed before Esau. So Dinah would be older, probably between 16 and 20. You have to understand, I say this a lot, the Bible is not chronological, it's theological. So sometimes, like when we get to the Joseph narrative in Genesis 37, this is actually before this scene here. So we got to be careful, but remember, the Bible is theological. So I want to make a couple of points before we go on to look at this text in its original context and then apply it to today, if God permits, because that's important. We want to take the text, the original hearers of the text. We got to do good exegesis so then we can apply it to today, because there's a lot here. There's really a lot in this text. What would be the attraction? So, well, let's talk about this. Let's talk about this together. What would be the attraction of a settled territory like Shechem for nomads like Jacob? Now, let me say this. At this point in their lives, they should have gone straight to Bethel. They come here on their own. Jacob comes here on his own. He doesn't have a word from God to come here. On the other hand, nomads with small cattle like Jacob would seek out tilled areas for their cattle and hope the established settlers would allow them to use their land. This is what makes the Bible real. This is what, when you understand the history here, this is something that Jacob said, hey, this would be a good place for me to settle. The reason being was to let their herds graze, especially during the summer, on the already harvested fields, according to the friendly agreement with the permanent population. And you can see they charged a fee for this, even though there was, in other words, you had a place to live, you had a place to settle, you can take care of your cattle. The permanence of cities, Charlie, was attractive. They were an allure of consistent trading, even protection, being an established community. So now listen to this, guys. So now your trust is in the governing establishment or the government and not God. This is the allure of being under a governmental system. Now listen, we want to be careful here when we talk about this. But remember, we belong to a different kingdom. We have to remember that we respect and honor, but we belong to a different kingdom. In fact, Shechem was only 6 miles from where God would eventually tell them to go. They were close, yet so far, because the enemy loves to supplement, Glenda, what? The good for the best. There's a lot here, and there's a lot for us to decipher here. It is here that Jacob's decision to settle in Shechem is a mistake. There's no command by God. He should have gone to Bethel, which was instructed by God. We'll see that in a second. But here, now hear this, the outward drawer subverts the inward faith. We live in that world today. You see, urban centers like Shechem were well advanced. They had very loose morals and were governed by one's own laws and ideologies. There was a powerful attraction for nomads like Jacob and his family to want to explore the unknown. This attraction of power and influence is no different than today. A lot of the time, no pun intended, the church wants to get in bed with the culture, because the culture is attractive, and we want to put one foot in the kingdom and one foot out because we want to get along. We want to fit in. We don't want to be salt and light. We don't want to be distinct. We want to be able to go back and forth as we please. And I know for some people, the old paths we know are important. The road is what? The road is a narrow road. And we have to be careful as a people of God that we don't get into the wide road. And as I said many times, the wide road is not unbelievers. They are unbelievers, but they're people who think that they are believers. And here, when we see for the Jacobites here, they're in a place that they should have never stopped. We've never done that before, right? Charlie, you've never done that. Mark, right? We've always followed the right path. But you see, when you see this, listen, guys, this is a challenging text. Shechem's a good place to be. It's a place that's attractive. It's got cities. It's got lights. It's got food. It's got entertainment. It's got all the stuff that the world offers. This was a powerful attraction for Jacob and his family to explore the unknown, the power of influence. Money and power have a greater law today. Technology and narcissism work hand in hand. We want to live and let live. Temporal mindsets at times for us trump eternal convictions. They're all over. Shechem is right out the door. As soon as you leave this church, it's right out the door. It's calling for you. There's a picture of having one foot in the kingdom, one foot in the world. This is how one's thinking becomes cognitively contaminated by relative ideas. Peter Berger coined that term, cognitive contamination, where the world's ideas just cognitively contaminate your mind and they continue to come. It's the opposite of absolute truth. We live in that world today. We live in Shechem. See, that's the thing. We live so close. I mean, you think about this. Erecting the altar in Shechem is outside orthodoxy. Again, it's so close yet so far. Many churches today have built their altars in Shechem, condoning certain cultural ideologies, no different than Shechem. This is a dire warning to those who have those mindsets. Shechem is outside orthodoxy. I'll talk about that in a little bit. In verse 1, the explorer is the daughter of Leah, whom she had born to Jacob, and she went out to visit the daughters of the land. Again, her father Jacob is silent. Now listen, I've always said it's really important how to read narrative rightly. Carolyn, you're going to probably want to write this down. So, Glinda, but I want you to see this. This is really important. There's a very important wordplay in this narrative that's important to note. Every time someone goes out, something is taken or threatened to be taken. Watch. Dinah goes out, verse 1. She's taken by Shechem, verse 2. When the brothers find out what happened, they threaten to go out and take Dinah unless the Shechemites adhere to circumcision, verse 17. When the Shechemites were giving their speech to the townsfolk, they said, "Let us go out and take their daughters," verse 21, "in marriage." And finally, the sons Simeon and Levi went out, took their swords, and not only took Dinah back, but the other sons went out and took the Shechemites' flocks. There's that Hebrew wordplay of going out and taking. Every time, now here's the deal. Every time boundaries are crossed, the narrator shows us the dire implications of when one crosses over from where they belong to where they don't belong. reading the narrative is showing you, see, the example is, yes, this was happening in real time, in real place, but the example is for us. The example is for me. The example is for you, brother. Sometimes we need not to cross those boundaries. We have to be careful when we cross those boundaries, because what happens is when we cross those boundaries, we take what those boundaries offer. And it's an interesting wordplay, Gene, here in the Hebrew, because every time somebody goes out, they take. And as we see that, we want to be mindful of what the author is trying to tell us, the divine author here. It's the same for us. Sometimes as Christians, we want to test the waters of this world. Some may say it's okay to explore sex before marriage, like we see here. Some say it's okay to endorse same-sex marriage, even calling some of these liaisons Christian in a politically correct way. And many churches are going out and taken in by strange ideologies. The text is alive and well today. Or like Jacob, we stand quiet as the world champions these sins. Our aloofness fits in with the world's ideologies of what is right for them is okay. Even if we know as Christians it may have eternal ramifications, we've become a silent people. We're afraid to speak. We don't want to let people know what we think because we don't want to hurt nobody's feelings, or we don't want to be challenged, or we want to sit in our Baptist corners and just worship the Lord, but we don't want to go out in the world and tell them what needs to be told. Please note that nowhere in the text is Dinah blamed for what happened to her. It may not have been smart to venture out alone, but we don't know the circumstances what led to that. Dinah probably was not a favored child because she was Leah's daughter. Favoritism doesn't happen in the Bible, does it? You see what happens with favoritism in the families? What happens? You notice Dinah here was obviously Leah's daughter. And when Jacob is even challenged, do you think he even cares and doesn't even mention Dinah? It's sad. So she's not the one to blame. If we've noticed, Dinah was kept hostage throughout the whole deal. She was kidnapped. I mean, you ever know in the text, no, they don't never give Dinah back. Dinah is being held captive as these negotiations are going on. In fact, blame is always placed squarely on Shechem's shoulders. The verbs are stark. Shechem saw her, took her, lay her, and shamed her, verse 2. Shechem defiled her, verse 5, 13, and 27, and did folly in Israel. No mention of Dinah doing folly. It's important to read narrative rightly. Dinah is a victim being born on the wrong side of the track. There's a lot here. Shechem treats Dinah as a prostitute, verse 31. No mention is made of Dinah acting like a prostitute and just sharing the blame. He rapes her first and then wants to marry her. So here lies the problem. There's a problem. A proper exegesis of this text should not make any reference to Dinah's views. Why? Because here's the prophetic voice. This is the prophetic voice in this text, right? Which is really important. You got to be careful when you intermingle with two cultures. That should be a warning for us, a warning to the church. See, this is a great, you got to be careful when you intermingle with two different cultures of two different mindsets. Notice it says, was it Hamar? Hamar's notice is he's like the best guy in the town. And he's raping women. That's the best guy? That's the number one guy, Ashley? That's the guy we need to follow? He had more respect than anybody else? Because today in this world, when we cross boundaries, them boundaries, them ideologies start infiltrating our heart in our mind and we start thinking like the world. We start thinking that everything's okay. You know what I'm saying? Because right away, this is okay. Well, you know, let's get married. Let's not get married first. Let's just try it first and see. We start thinking that's okay. We start gravitating towards the ideologies of the world because there's no, here's the word, there's no restraint. Pastor Dominic Grimaldi again, Street Talk Theology. Hope you enjoyed part one of Genesis 34 and the story of Dinah and the Jacobites. I pray that you enjoyed it and hopefully look forward to next week. And again, this is Street Talk Theology. We take theology and bring it to the street.
Thank you for joining us for Street Talk Theology with Pastor Dominic Grimaldi. You can visit Pastor Dom at Desert Sky Baptist Church at 891 West Corson Road, Casa Grande. And for more information, visit us online at www.desertskybaptist.org.